everyone. This is Cathy Duffy, Senior Community Support Worker for Devon Insight, for those that don't already know me. It's lovely to welcome you back today. I would like to just remind people that as you're coming into the room, you will be muted, so you can hear us, but we can't hear you. And that is just so that gives our opportunity for our speaker or myself to be really clear to everyone and that everybody can hear well without kind of background noise. However, at the end of today's event, if we get time, we may open up the call for questions or comments. I would ask that people can please ensure that they have their TV turned down or their radio turned down or any background noise, just so that it makes it easier for everybody to be able to hear without interference. So today we are delighted to welcome Nick Collins from Optima Low Vision Services to talk to us about the services that they provide and what you can expect from a low vision service. And also to answer some of the questions that people kindly provided for us. Welcome, Nick.
Good morning. Good morning, Cathy. Thanks for having me. And again, it's always nice to speak with the team at Devon Insight. So, so here we are. So, as you mentioned, Cathy, what we do, I'm a director at Optima Low Vision Services. So my first sort of hat that I wear is I'm a certified low vision therapist. And what that means is, as you know, when people start to experience difficulty with their eyesight, they typically go to their optician because they think, do you know what, I think my glasses just need to be changed. They go to the optician, notices the problem, and then people are then referred to the hospital. So the hospital is where you'll see your doctor, your consultant ophthalmologist. And their job then is to fix, mend, and repair, is to identify the problem and treat, manage wherever possible. But as we know, large number of people, even with the expert help at a hospital, still will experience difficulty with their vision, which means that everyday tasks will become more problematic. So most people I work with, it's going to be things like reading, writing, seeing small packaging and things like that, watching television, perhaps with glare. So as a low vision therapist, so in a low vision clinic, our job is to look at practical ways to make that easier. And that could result in many different types of options or different sort of ways around that. So during an appointment, so if you are experiencing difficulty with your vision and you do attend a hospital service or have attended a hospital service, you should be referred to a low vision clinic. So when you attend a low vision clinic, this is how, obviously, I'm speaking from our service. The first, obviously, question is, do you understand about your eyesight? So we'll discuss with the person what their diagnosis means, because as good as the hospital are, you know, the ophthalmologists and the nurses, ophthalmic nurses and the specialists, they've got wands in their hands. They do a fantastic job. But unfortunately, they don't have the time that they often need and want to explain things clearly. So we'll talk about the diagnosis. We'll talk about what macular degeneration means, or glaucoma, or cataract, and so on, and give people opportunity to chat to us about that. But then we'll ask the person what the practical problems they have. How can we help you today? What do you find difficult to see to do? And then once we have an understanding of where we need to go, what's the problem that the person's having, then we need to find out how well the person sees, what's happening. So we will test the person's distance vision. So we use an eye chart, typically, you know, as you notice, the big letter at the top and the letters get smaller and so on. Then we'll test the person's near vision. So we use a reading chart. Again, similar principle, large print gets smaller and smaller. And what we're looking for is, what's the main cause of the problem? Is it because the print is too small? Is it because different types of eye conditions mean that parts of the words go blurry or missing and things like that? So what's the real problem? What's causing the difficulty? We use lighting as part of our assessment, because as I say, lighting is one of the most important parts of the assessment. So we introduced task lighting to see how what a difference that makes. And to be honest, it's really unappreciated how much light can help. I think we say about 1 in 7 people we see in our clinic just need extra lighting in order to help them to see, to read. So they've attended our clinic, having difficulty with perhaps reading the newspaper. With their best glasses on they've got, they still can't read the newspaper. But when we introduce a bit more lighting, they can. So explaining the advantages and the best way to use lighting is really part of the assessment as well. So if the person's difficulty is mainly because the print is too small, that's magnification. So we need to know the strength of magnifier the person needs and the style of magnifier that suits the job. And we often have people ask us, well, I want the, you know, a strong magnifier and so on, or I want a very big magnifier. So people really want to have a big lens that fills a lot of the area they're trying to read. Unfortunately, with magnifiers, the stronger the magnifier is, the smaller the lens or the smaller the viewing angle is going to be. So our job is to find the least amount of magnification which will allow the person to read comfortably. So there is a balance to be made, because the stronger the magnifier, the smaller the lens, but also the closer you need to bring it to your eye as well. So people will need to adapt and adjust the way that they like to read or they like to do different tasks. Once we've got the magnification that the person needs, then my job is to look at the style or the type of magnifier that suits the person. And there are lots of different styles. So the most obvious one for people and that people will experience is handheld magnifier. So typically an illuminated handheld magnifier, so magnifier with a light. The hand magnifier is you hold it at the right distance from the page, and obviously it's got the light. Disadvantage with that is you have to keep it steady. You have to keep it at the right place. And some people, that's not very comfortable. So another option is something called an illuminated stand magnifier. So a stand magnifier has its own little sort of shelf or stand. When placed on the page, the lens is already in focus. And that's convenient because even if you've got perhaps an unsteady hand or you find it difficult to keep the magnifier in the right place, that stand magnifier will do that for you. It is a bit more bulky though. So it's a disadvantage is you're not going to carry it around to a shop or something like that. You can have a magnifier in a spectacle frame. So if people need hands-free. Now, this is a difficult one because when we use magnifiers in a spectacle frame, yes, we have our two hands free, but what we then have to do is to hold things much, much closer to our eyes. And a lot of people like the idea of having a magnifier in a spectacle frame, but don't like to hold things really, really close. So it's not the most popular type of magnifier, but again, showing that to the person and having the person try it out for themselves, you know, my patients, they make the decisions, not me. And that's, there are other types of magnifiers as well, but they're the main styles of magnifiers we typically go for. But it's not always magnification that's needed. Some people have difficulty with glare. So our job when it's glare is to find the right sort of color or tint which reduces the glare, but hopefully doesn't reduce the person's ability to see as well, because a lot of people put on very dark pairs of sunglasses, which may reduce the glare, but perhaps too dark, and it means they can't see so well. And there are lots of other different, you know, depending on what people have difficulty with, our job is then to make that hopefully as easy as possible. And it's not, I'd like to say it's an exact science, but it's not. So our appointments typically last for an hour. Now, when I've worked with a person for an hour, and maybe there's a little bit more we need to do, or the person hasn't quite had the hang of the magnifiers, or it's a bit more tricky perhaps for them, there's a bit more training needed, then we typically recall that person or review them, maybe about 4 to 6 weeks later, just to double check whether the magnifiers that they have suit them correctly, are working for them. If the person, reasonably speaking, is satisfied with what they've got, as in they have the skills, they have the equipment, they know what to do, we often then give the person something called an open appointment. An open appointment means that if they feel they don't have what they need, maybe the magnifiers are not quite as good as they were, or something else is more difficult that they forgot to mention, they can then self-refer back to see us. So they just ring us up and say, I've had more problems with my magnifiers. Can I see us again? And then they come to see us again. And we find that's better. We don't do routine annual appointments. So I don't say I want to see people every year, because I don't think that's a really good use of time, because I don't know in a year's time whether the person needs to see me or not. Or in between that, maybe earlier than a year, the person's having difficulty, and if they wait a year, well, is that too late? So part of it is giving people responsibility. You know, the service is for their benefit, not ours. And for the specific service that we provide, it's for Torbay Hospital. So if you're a patient of Torbay Hospital, you're eligible to see us through the NHS, which means that the assessment itself is free of charge and the provision of magnifiers is free on loan to the person. We also have services for Somerset and parts of Dorset as well. But say at the moment, that's where we mainly work.
Okay. Nick, can I just say that one of the questions that was submitted was around glare shields?
Yeah,
and this
okay.
is something that particularly while we've been supporting people over the phone during COVID rather than face-to-face, it was around how are they different from sunglasses, which you covered, but also how would I know what colour to get and where can I get them from?
Absolutely.
I do that quite often.
Yeah, absolutely. So the difference really, so why do you not just get a pair of sunglasses from your optician or so on? Well, first of all, I would discourage people buying very cheap pairs of sunglasses. And the reason for that is what we do want with any type of good quality sunglasses are UVA and UVB protection. So that's the type of light that can cause problems to eyesight. So a very cheap pair of sunglasses typically doesn't have that protection. Now, where we tend to differ from your traditional sunglasses are there. Traditional sunglasses are what we call a tint. So a tint just reduces the total amount of light entering your eye. So it makes things darker. Now, that for most people, the general public, is fine because we've got good vision and we've got good what we call visual reserve. So even if we lose a little bit of our ability to see, it doesn't really make a difference. However, patients we work with, the people we work with in the clinic, I've already mentioned, a lot of people really need extra light, and light helps people to see. So if we wear dark pairs of sunglasses, it will make seeing more difficult, and I simply don't want to do that. So if you're walking around out and about, you're more at risk of trips and falls because you don't see so well. So that's where normal tints that just make things darker can sometimes be problematic. So what we tend to look at is something called a filter. So a filter reduces certain types of light. So UV and blue light tends to be the light that causes this irritation, glare sensitivity, and so on. But if we can reduce that type of light, it means that it doesn't have to be dark then. So that's why we tend to go for filters. Now, filters then tend to look more sort of yellow, orange, amber type colors. Now, which color for which person is quite individual, but what I tend to suggest is a very rough guideline, and I'm going to be very sort of broad in this, and it's certainly not an exact science, but if we have, for example, things like macular degeneration, in our experience, people tend to prefer the yellow to the orange type of color. People with sort of retinal problems like diabetic retinopathy and things like that tend to prefer more the amber to red type of color. People with glaucoma, again, yellow to gray type colors. Again, these are very broad generalizations. But when testing, when checking which is right for you, what I would always recommend wherever possible is when you put them on, first of all, check like a poster or a picture or something in the distance. Check your distance vision. Then put on the sunglasses or filters and check, do you see that what that image or that object as clearly as you did? Because what I don't want to do is when you put on a dark pair of sunglasses, you don't see so well. That's a problem. So it's difficult over the phone. I appreciate that. It's one of those parts of the recent COVID is made it much more difficult, is giving advice over the phone about things that people really should see in person.
Yeah, now, and that's really interesting, because it is when people look online, which some people obviously do, that's their preferred way to shop, will be bombarded with lots of different information about different types of filter glasses. And have no idea which ones would be relevant for them. But also the fit is quite important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So first question when looking at the frame or the fit you want is, do you wear spectacles? So if you are a spectacle wearer, you should have a pair that fit over the top of your glasses. Because, as I say, you want to take the advantage of wearing your spectacles. I appreciate a lot of people feel that the glasses don't help them particularly, but I would suggest that if your glasses have been prescribed, they've been prescribed for a good reason. So to try to keep your glasses on as much as you need. So you'd want a frame that fits over the top. The advantage of that is when you go into a shop, which you don't need it, you take them off. It's a much more easy to do. So with a fit over pair, you can have medium, small, and large sort of sizes for that. If you don't wear spectacles, if you're not a spectacle wearer, then you can have more sort of a wraparound or like a curved sort of sunglasses type frame, which is fits tighter to the face, which is, you know, it's quite sleek, looks quite nice. The disadvantage is you have no opportunity to wear glasses underneath. But again, that will depend on the person.
Yeah, and it is around the principle of making kind of the best use of your usable sight. So yep. If your prescribed glasses are kind of making that, you know, the optimum use of kind of your usable sight, you want to keep that while you're using filter glasses as well. So, yeah, completely makes sense to me. Okay, so another question that we had sent through to us was, which you kind of already answered, but I just kind of want to clarify that it's about areas, is, can I see you for my low vision assessment instead of going to the hospital?
So we're the NHS service for Torbay Hospital itself. So if you attend Torbay Hospital or have attended Torbay Hospital for your eyesight, you can see us through the NHS. That's not area specific. So you could live in, we've had patients from Cornwall, for example, who have attended because for whatever reason they attended Torbay. Now, this is due to how services are commissioned or how services are funded and paid for. So it was probably several years ago now, one of the CCGs, and the CCG is a clinical commissioning group, New Devon, so that's Northeast West Devon CCG, made the decision to put the responsibility for low vision assessments on each individual acute hospital. So in Devon, there are sort of your four main hospitals. So you've got sort of Barnstable, Exeter, Torbay, and Plymouth. So which hospital you attend for your eyesight, for your ophthalmology, that's the hospital service you should attend for low vision. We just happen to do the service for Torbay.
Yeah. And historically, did you cover other areas prior to that?
Yes, that's a shame because, well, from our perspective anyway, is we did have the contract to deliver the service for anybody who was part of New Devon CCG. So that was, if your GP was Northeast West Devon, you could see us. And, you know, we ran a very good partnership with Devon Inside where, you know, we had lots of people who would attend. It didn't matter which hospital you attended in that instance, as long as your GP was a Devon registered GP, we could see you then. And you could have the choice. You could go to your hospital service for your low vision, or you could choose to see us. But unfortunately, the funding was withdrawn. They decided that they didn't. The commissioning group decided they didn't want to commission services. But yeah, frustrating. So we run a service in Somerset where if you are a GP, if your GP is a Somerset GP, you attend the service. Doesn't matter which hospital you go to. So, you know, a lot of people in Somerset may go to Musgrove, they may go to Yeovil or perhaps even Bath or Bristol. But you're eligible for the service because you're a GP resident of Somerset. So it meant it's a bit more flexibility in how it was delivered. But unfortunately, the decisions were made above our heads, I'm afraid. And it's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was kind of just that some people may be slightly confused as to historically they would remember coming to our old offices at Station House in Topsham.
Topsham, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And I would see patients in Totnes who would be in Kingsbridge or Plimstock or sort of north and west Devon as well. So it wasn't just our Station House and Topsham, seeing people from sort of east Devon as well. So commissioning is one of those complicated things, which is more complicated than it needs to be, I'm afraid.
I know. Yeah, I can appreciate that. Okay, so our next question, again, it's kind of about West England Eye Unit, but in there asking, I want to buy a new magnifier but do not want to go to West England of Eye Unit for a low vision assessment. Are you able to do some kind of assessment over the phone so I know that I am buying the correct magnifier that will suit my needs?
So I would always encourage people to attend the local low vision service, because, as I say, the service is free of charge and the magnifiers themselves are free on loan. But obviously people have choice, and it's, you know, we are our own people. If you want to purchase a magnifier, yes, we can work with you in those cases. So, for example, what we do at Optima is we sell equipment across the country anyway, so we don't always have a clinic to see people in person. So certainly it's not as thorough or in-depth as a low-vision assessment would be, but if somebody were interested in buying a magnifier, first thing we need to know is, you know, if somebody phones me up and says, I want to buy a magnifier, I say, yeah, that's fine. The next question, most important question, is, do you know the level of magnification you need? And some people, yes, I need a 5x magnifier, or I need an 8x. You know, people can be quite specific and they know what they need, but quite a number of people don't know, which is understandable. So what we tend to do is we would send out one of our booklets, which is called Choosing Your Magnifier. So it talks about different types of magnifiers, but more importantly, it's got a magnification prediction chart in it. So it's got our reading chart that I use in my clinic. So the print that starts off very large and the print gets smaller. So the last size print the person reads comfortably would give us an indication of how much magnification they would therefore need. So once we have an understanding of the magnification the person needs, then we can talk about what style of magnifier. Again, what does a person want to use the magnifier for? Do they want to use it for spot reading, through chopping, you know, pocket magnifier, or do they want something more substantial for, you know, reading and so on? So once we know the magnification correct, or roughly speaking, it's around about that, then we can progress and talk about the style of magnifier.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. Next question is, someone submitted that they still try and do some craft work and painting. I really need a magnifier that is hands-free. What are my options?
Okay, so yeah, absolutely. So this is a perfect example of why don't I just have one magnifier that does everything? So people talk about hand magnifiers a lot, but in this instance, this person's asking something where they need their both hands free. So first thing I always point to is, has the person used increased amounts of illumination or light or task lighting? Because you might find that with extra lighting, we might get away without the need for a magnifier. However, if we do need a magnifier, you can have something called a stand magnifier. So it's got its own sort of frame where the magnifier sits on the page. Now, for crafts or for artwork, field of view and to see quite a large area is important. So they tend to be less powerful magnifiers, so it gives you a nice big lens, and it gives you an open space to work underneath the magnifier. So it's as if you've got like a little A-frame with a magnifier above that, so you can work under it. Another option is, as I mentioned, is to have a magnifier and a spectacle frame. So that will then give the person two hands free. The disadvantage is that they would have to get close to what they're trying to see. So if you've got an easel, if you've got your canvas, or you've got your whatever you're doing, you would need to be nice and close. Now, when I mean close, you're talking 3-4 inches, maybe even closer than that, obviously depending on the magnification. So whether the person's able to do that. Then there's more sort of technological, sort of more perhaps more high-tech options. You can use certain types of video magnifiers. So there will be ones that have larger screens. Quite often it's got a large screen at the top, and it's got like a little shelf with a movable platform underneath that with a camera. So you put your artwork under that, and you kind of work, you look at the screen, and the camera magnifies that image for you. So there are options. It's obviously, it can be a bit tricky because it depends on what the person wants to see to do. They're the most likely options.
Yeah. I must admit, there have been times, obviously pre-COVID, when I've gone out to support people with part of our sight loss MOT, which is our assessment, and one of the areas is around craft work or hobbies that people used to have that they felt that they were on the point of giving up on. And sometimes it takes a little bit of creative thinking, and I have used clamps and all sorts of things to enable, and done a lot of Googling, especially around the one that I used to have most problems with is sewing machines. So looking at whether there are tables that we can clamp onto so the a magnifier can be held in the right position without getting in the way of the hands. I don't want any people sewing their fingers. But yeah, you know, usually we can find a way around that. But it is about looking at what the task is. As you talked about in your initial assessment of kind of people, what it is that they want to do and what is the most appropriate type of magnifier.
Absolutely. And it's also managing expectations as well. So when I work with a person, what we do, I'm afraid, is always plan B. It's not perfect. It's not whatever people... So people want to be able to see to do things as they used to, typically. Yeah. So people want to be able to read at their normal reading distance and not be, have a cumbersome magnifier to use. But unfortunately, that's not always possible. So meeting people halfway, so managing expectations and people adapting. And, I may not be able to do my artwork as I used to or, to the standard I used to. But you know what? I can still do it and I can still enjoy it. So, again, it's meeting people halfway.
You've talked, one of the questions was about the main difference between different task lights. Are some better for certain tasks? I know you have talked about different types of task lights, but are there some that are kind of better, say, for reading, or actually is it down to individualized needs rather than being that generic?
So the biggest mistake that people make with lighting is they look at how bright and how strong the light is going to be. And a lot of people would look at what's the wattage of my light bulb, I want a 100-watt bulb and so on. Well, as things have changed, we use lighting with something called LED. So LED is a much more efficient way of lighting now. So LED will be more energy efficient. So we don't need to have as much wattage to produce the same amount of brightness. So light bulbs, actually, instead of looking at the wattage on a light bulb, you should probably look at the lumens. Now, lumens is how bright the light is. However, the position of the light is critical. if I have a really bright light, but it's too far away from what I'm trying to see to do, it's not as effective. It's not really helping me. So when I'm working with somebody in the clinic, I bring the light gradually down very, very close to what they're trying to see. And I typically bring it below their eye level and either in front or to the side of the person. I try to avoid a light coming over a person's shoulder. And that's mainly due to the distance between the light bulb and the object they're trying to see. For example, if I half the distance between the light and the object, I don't double the amount of light I use. I quadruple the amount of light on the page. So you can have the best light money can buy, but if it's positioned inappropriately or poorly, you're not taking advantage of it. So the main differences in task lights, my first question is, what do you want to use it for? Then the two sort of deciding factors are, do you want something that's floor standing or freestanding, or do you want something that's tabletop? So again, can you bring the light to where you want to read, to where you want it to be? So a really good tabletop light, if you're in an armchair and you can't get that light towards you, it's not going to be as helpful. So again, where is the light going to be? So are some better for certain tasks? Well, not particularly, as long as you can bring the light where it needs to be. So the main things I would look for task lighting is that they are flexible, that they are maneuverable, so you can really position them to your needs. You can bring them nice and close and so on. That would be my advice. And there's a huge range of lighting. I tend to prefer LED. And the reason I tend to prefer LED is when I turn an LED light bulb on, it's instantly bright. So it doesn't take time to get to its brightest level. So, you know, traditional, the energy saving bulbs, you know yourself, they take a long time to get nice and bright. With an LED, it's instantly bright. The other advantage of LED is the bulb itself doesn't get hot. So your traditional incandescent bulb or your halogen bulb, they could be bright, but they get very hot. And if I'm bringing that really close to what I want to see to do, it could get uncomfortable. Perhaps, you know, people can sometimes scald themselves with light bulbs that are too close to them. LED, you don't have that problem. You know, I can put an LED bulb on all day. I could touch that bulb at the end of the day and it will not be hot. So I tend to prefer LED for task lighting. And then the color of the light as well. So your normal light bulbs are more sort of like your warm yellow lights. What I tend to find for task lighting, again, I'm making a generalization here, but most people I work with tend to prefer more white, or what we call daylight simulation. So more of a white light. And that helps for contrast for most people. So when you're looking at a light bulb or a light itself, it'll tell you the light temperature, and that's the color of the light. So for tasks, for reading, for detail tasks, I would tend to go for more white light, or what we call cool white light, to help with that, rather than the more yellow bulbs that you can get in the shops.
Okay, of course. Now that's interesting, because I was recently talking to a lady who had notice that when she has task lighting, she has one on her coffee table, so she can use that kind of, you know, when she's reading or doing small tasks, and it's portable, so she could take it into the kitchen and use it for, I think she's doing on her worktops or whatever. But she said she'd noticed that when she went for her latest optician's appointment, when she walked into the opticians, she was able to see much better. But that's because they have really good, bright lighting. So
yeah,
see
absolutely.
Around the room better. So she was asking for advice about, her general lighting at home. And would the same principles apply?
So for general lighting, I would tend to make sure that the lighting is evenly spread around the room or spread around the your home. So you don't have a small number of light sources. For general lighting, what tends to work is up lighting can be very successful. So it makes the ceiling nice and bright, and then the light then reflects down. So nice even spread of light across the home. light temperature, the color of the light, I would tend to go for more yellow, the warmer light for that, because you tend to find the daylight or the white light can be a little bit harsh for yeah. your living room or for your dining room and so on. I would recommend LED lighting specifically for areas of transition. So your hallways, your stairways, your kitchen or your bathroom, because you need the light straight away. Yeah. So if you're going to you're going into your hall or you're going up your stairs, you want the light to be bright instantly. Your living room is and your dining room is probably less critical because you can pop the light on and, you know, after 10 minutes, it's nice and bright. But if you need the light straight away, I would recommend using LED for those areas of transition. Also, to try and avoid glare, I would recommend all lights should be diffused, or they should, you know, they should have a shade on them. I would not have any exposed bulbs. Exposed bulbs are going to produce a lot of glare. So nice large shades or diffusers to spread the light around the room. That's general. Obviously, I can't be specific because huge things like decor and furniture make a huge influence. You know, what color are the floors? Yeah. What color are the walls? It's huge. And how high are the ceilings? You know, how big is the room? So you can't be specific because everyone's rooms are different. But again, general is multiple light sources, nice and diffused. If you can, try and illuminate the ceiling because that will then deflect the light back down.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's really useful. And it's a very good point about the areas of transition. We all do that. Everybody's trying to be energy efficient at the moment. But with the older bulbs, or the bulbs where you switch on the light and then you have to kind of either wait or risk kind of moving
yeah.
into an area that's not completely lit. And it's always going to be when you're moving into another room, moving into a kitchen or going up or down the stairs. I've done it myself.
And I appreciate the cost of LED bulbs are sound on the surface, expensive, but actually they last. You can have an LED bulb that lasts best part of 10 years. It keeps on going. So it will save you money in terms of energy costs, running costs, replacing the bulb. But also think about just safety. If you're replacing a bulb, what we often have to do is, I have to get a stepladder or I have to get a stool out and trying to stand up and change the bulb. And if we're not all that safe on our feet, it can be a little bit more dangerous. So yeah. If we've got an LED bulb in there, once it's in there, you can put it in there, fit it and forget about it.
Yeah, no, very good point. Okay, so our next question was, do I have to be registered as sight impaired or severely sight impaired to have a low vision assessment?
No, absolutely not. That's a simple no. You need to attend a low vision, you need to attend an ophthalmology department at some stage. You need to have something that be prescribed that there has been a problem. But there isn't any barrier in terms of how much or how little you see. I'd be very much against that because it's far easier to work with a person who's got reasonably good vision to start off with and then over the years or over time adjust levels of magnification rather than waiting for everything to get really terrible and then try to help. You know, as I mentioned, if somebody's not, if they've got the vision's good enough where they're not registrable, but they are having problems, well, why doesn't that person deserve support? So, yeah, I absolutely not. There is no entry barrier in terms of registration.
Perfect. And that's quite often when we engage with people is when they haven't been registered and quite often will have no idea what the low vision assessment is, which is unfortunate. Okay, so what is the difference in a private or NHS referred assessment? Are the aids better quality if I pay privately?
So mostly speaking, there shouldn't be much difference. So when I see a person, if I see you through my NHS clinic or see you privately, I don't roll out the red carpet for you if you're private. I don't sort of, you know, get the nice teacups out and, you know, use my golden crusted magnifiers for you. So what I tend to do, so the structure of my assessments is irrelevant if it's NHS or private. So you get the same service, in my opinion. Obviously, privately, we're probably scheduled, so we're not on a clinic day, so we've got perhaps a bit more time, a bit more space either side of appointments. So that side of it, there isn't much difference in assessments. In terms of aids, no, typically they will be the same. So optical magnifiers, your hand magnifiers and different ones I mentioned, you get, they're similar. So if you're an NHS service, you get those magnifiers as well. It's not as if you take better quality magnifiers out if you're a private patient.
Yes.
There are some cases where as it's an NHS service, the magnifiers you have are on loan to you. Now, quite often people will have a magnifier and maybe they didn't like it, didn't work for them, and they've returned it. So that's easily for us to do. If that magnifier is in perfectly good working condition, we can clean, fix, mend, repair it. It might just need a little bit of a wipe and it's fine. That can then go back into stock. So if you're in an NHS service, on occasion, you might have a reconditioned magnifier. There's nothing wrong with it. It just, you know, it helps with the budget, because we all have a budget to stick with. Because they say that rather than giving people new magnifiers every single time, that makes it very expensive. Obviously, private appointments, a private assessment, it's a new magnifier. The main difference between a private and an NHS assessment is NHS assessments, we can't issue video magnifiers, the more expensive sort of electronic magnifiers.
Yeah.
I do sometimes demonstrate video magnifiers to people at an NHS appointment, but I have to be a bit sort of careful with that, because they're not available through the NHS because of the cost. And I need to make a decision on is it right to show this person a video magnifier? And I do get it wrong, so I'll work with a person, and I should have. So the reason people would tend to go for a video magnifier is they perhaps don't like the size of the lens of their strong magnifier they've got, or the working distance, how close they have to hold the magnifier, and so on. Whereas a private assessment, you can have a look at all the equipment. You know, there's no barrier on that. Obviously, if it's something you're interested in, you need to purchase it. Whereas NHS assessments, I personally prefer NHS assessment, and the reason I prefer NHS assessment is because I can see the person multiple times and there's no cost implication for the person. So if I work with a person and I'm not quite sure if the magnifiers are quite as good as I think they should, you know, there's some practice needed, the person needs to take the magnifiers at home, see how they get on, then I can review them. I've got it's much easier to do that in an NHS assessment. Because I might have given them a magnifier and it didn't quite work for whatever reason, they can return that. With a private appointment, yes, they can return the magnifier, but you know, you got the sort of, they purchased it and you got it, that's part of it. So it's wherever possible, I'd always recommend access your NHS low vision service.
Yeah. Perfect. And that leads nicely into my next question. It's about how do I get an appointment with you if I am no longer under the eye clinic? So it may be people that have been discharged from the eye clinic.
So if you've been discharged from Torbay Hospital, not a problem. You can see us through the NHS. If you have not been, if you're not a patient of Torbay and you've been discharged from another eye clinic, you can contact us, obviously, with Devon Insight. We have our contact details, and we can have a chat and see when you'd like to attend. Obviously, we're based in Totnes, so you'd need to be willing to travel to see us in Totnes. But that can be arranged. Obviously, we'll do it on a non-clinic day and so on. So that could be done. But again, if you've been discharged from the eye clinic, it may mean you're still eligible for a low vision clinic. But again, I would chat with your the hospital service that you've been with. But again, if you're, like, I think the previous question was not, I prefer, you'd like to see us ourselves. Well, you can contact us directly and we can organize something for you.
Okay, that is the end of the questions that were sent through. And actually, thank you to people who sent them because they were really, really useful. And I've been scribbling all over my notes with kind of areas that you've covered there, Nick. So that was kind of fantastic. Thank you. Let me see. So we're already at 11:15. So Tracy and Louise, can we open up the calls? So if there's anybody that would like to ask any questions or make any comments to either Nick or myself, please feel free. Calls are just opening up.
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
This is Sarah from Newton Abbott. And
hello,
is there anything I can use to make the picture on the television clearer? Because it's I can't see details on the television.
Okay, so for television, again, there's a couple of ways around television. I'm going to be quite simplistic in the first option. So the first option is have you any opportunity to sit closer? The closer you are to the television, the bigger the screen's going to be. So if you're 10 feet away and you sit half the distance away, it's going to be two times magnification.
Yeah, well, I sit as close as I can.
How close is that?
Oh, well, if I'm on the chair, it's between my knees and the television.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, you're
very
already
close.
Doing the first thing correctly.
I couldn't get any closer.
Absolutely. No, certainly not. It's getting inside the TV. So another option is a binocular that people wear for television. So it's two layers of lenses, which then magnify the image by two times. I don't think in this instance that will be suitable, because when we wear binoculars like that, there's a minimum distance we need to be from the TV to focus it. So you'd have to sit maybe 3 yards away for it to actually start to work. But 3 yards away and then magnify it two times, you're already sitting closer than that. So
yes.
I'd be skeptical to say that would work necessarily for you. Do you wear your glasses when you watch television?
No, the glasses don't make any difference. I've got macular, and no glasses can help. Only the cheap £1 glasses, the most magnified of those. The optician said it's perfectly all right to use those.
Yeah, that would be for reading, certainly. But
well, that's
distance,
for reading, but even so, they don't work for reading anymore, so I need an enlarged magnifying glass, I think.
You need a magnifier, certainly. But what I would recommend, though, is have you been prescribed distance spectacles?
They don't work. No, I can't use any spectacles, I'm afraid.
Yeah, what you might find is, and this is experience that lots of people have, they say exactly as you're saying, is even though spectacles that are prescribed don't solve the problem, they might make the image that little bit sharper. They don't make it perfect, certainly not, absolutely not, but it may make it a little bit sharper. The other thing that might be necessary when you have macular degeneration is that you use perhaps, macular degeneration is your central vision that doesn't work very well. Often people have an alternative area of their vision that works a little bit better than the center. So that's something called eccentric viewing, where you look slightly away from center to make things a bit clearer, clearer. Yeah, so rather than looking directly at the television, the person may look perhaps above or below the television, or maybe a bit to the side of the television. Obviously, guidance can be given for that. For example, our low vision service, we do offer eccentric viewing where necessary, because if you look straight at something and you don't see it so well, it would be the same when you look straight at the television. It would be the same when you look straight at somebody's face. It would be the same as when you try to read something. If you continue to use an area of vision that doesn't work so well, it will be blurry. So what I might recommend
that's a good
is
idea. Yeah.
So it's perhaps identifying a slightly different area of vision. And again, if you're eligible for our service, we certainly can look at that for you.
Oh, yes. I'll try and come and see you when one can, yes.
So you have been to Torbay Hospital, have you?
I have been to Torbay Hospital, yes.
Yeah, okay. So you're certainly eligible to
and
see.
And I have been
seen us
to
before?
Low vision in Totnes in the past, but I haven't
okay.
been for a number
yeah.
of years.
It might be an idea that we see you again then, perhaps.
I think so, yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. Right, look forward to seeing you then.
Yeah, lovely, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Was there anyone else that would like to ask a question?
Yes, hello.
Hello, who's this?
Hello, I'm Tina from Seaton. Yeah?
Sorry, could you just say that again for me?
I'm Tina from Seaton.
Oh, hello, Tina. Sorry,
hello.
I heard that.
It's all right, yeah. No, I came in a bit late, I'm afraid, because there was another phone call, but I'm interested in the sunglasses because, as you said, the ordinary sunglasses, although they're darker, I can't see so well with them on. I've got some that go over my glasses, but I'm wondering about the sort of lens that would be better. You said something about yellow or amber.
So do you mind me asking what your eye condition is?
Yeah, I've got macula.
Yeah. Okay, so I would tend to go for sort of your yellow or amber.
Yellow ones.
So yellow or orange, or maybe orange perhaps. So
yeah, I've got grey, I think, at the moment. Grey.
Yeah.
So, at the moment.
And grey. Yeah, so greys tend to be what we call a tint, so it reduces the glare for you, but you said when you wear them, you don't see so well through them.
No, I don't.
No. So what we tend to find are more sort of yellow or orange colours tend to be more successful. So
right.
I would go for that option really for yourself for macular degeneration. Now you can get different darkness or different strengths of orange. So it doesn't have to be one orange. So
no.
You could have a dark orange or a light orange and so on. But That's what I would tend to recommend for somebody with macular degeneration.
Right. Okay. I have got transition lenses on my glasses, but of course they're not too bad for the winter, but they're not so good when the sun is really bright
no.
in the summer.
No. And so, they probably get either too dark or they don't react quickly enough.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
But it's all right to put an orange sunglasses over them, is it?
Yes, it is, because what you'll find is it's a certain types of light that cause you problems. So you might not necessarily need that transition part of it, because you don't really want to make things too dark. You want
no.
to reduce the type of light that causes you problems. So that's where the filter
yeah.
tends to be, in our experience, more successful.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a really good point, actually, because transition glasses are very popular, and opticians will actively encourage people to have transitions on their glasses, which I did myself and regret it, to be absolutely honest with you. So I won't be having that when I have my eyes reassessed. Because it is, again, what you were talking about earlier about keeping as much good light as you possibly can. And is that kind of shielded out in the same way as it would be if you were wearing a pair of sunglasses, that you're reducing some of that good light going into your eye?
All right.
I tend to find transitions tend to be, as I said, a tint. So for the general public, transitions can be very successful. And what I tend to ask people is, when they have transitions, do you find them helpful? And if the answer is, well, not really, well, perhaps don't go for a transition. Some people find them great. It's the same when people talk about having bifocals and varifocals and things like that.
Yeah.
Again, there isn't one rule for all. Absolutely not. Some people do like their transitions. But again, if they're asking questions about filters and glare, it doesn't sound like they're helping.
Yeah.
No, I like my transition lenses for normally, and I've got varifocals, and I've always
yeah.
liked them. But
yeah.
if they're not so good with sunglasses over the top, maybe I should get a pair that, you know, aren't transition.
Well, the advantage...
I don't go to the opticians anymore. They don't call me anymore. I think they think
okay.
that I can't get a stronger lens.
Well, okay, first of all, that's another good point I will raise. Do you go to the hospital for your eyesight as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I've just been. I went yesterday.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Okay.
Scan,
I was just going to say that a mistake that people make is they stop going to their optician because they think they were told, or they perhaps think there's nothing else that can be done. Now, the two main reasons we go to the optician, the first and most important reason we go to the optician is for eye health to be checked. So it's to check to see how healthy our eyes are. Is there any concern? Is there anything that needs to be checked? That's what the optician, the optometrist's primary role is. Second reason we go to our optician is to check whether our current spectacles allow the light to focus correctly on the back of our eye. And that can be done and so on. So if somebody has been discharged from the hospital and they're not being seen routinely for their eye health to be checked by the hospital, you should go to your optician, you know, roughly speaking about once a year to make sure that the health of your eyes are monitored. So obviously you've mentioned that you go regularly to the hospital for that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if you were to be discharged, I would always go to your optician routinely for the health of your eyes to be monitored.
Yeah, because the optician used to call me every month, every 6 months or a year. And now, of course, they don't because they know I'm referred to the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I haven't been for several years.
Yeah, if you got to a stage where the hospital were to discharge you because there was no treatment necessary or needed, then you would return to your optician on that routine basis.
I could go anyway, though, couldn't I? If I decide not to have, if I want another pair of glasses and not
try. Yeah, I'm sure you can. Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah.
They're not going to throw you out. They're not going to turn you away.
No. Okay.
But again,
thank you.
You're welcome. I'd always discuss things with your optician as well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Perfect. Before we are reaching the end of our call time at the moment, but I would just like to let people know that next week our speaker will, who is it going to be? It is Ian Johnston from the Devon and Somerset Fire Services, who will talk about the home safety check services they offer during COVID and in normal times as well. Invaluable service, completely free, so please join us for that. Nick, I would like to thank you so much. That was a really, really informative talk. And I am sure that people were able to get a lot of information from that. I certainly did.
Oh, excellent. You're very welcome. Always my pleasure.
Thank you very much.